Everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Fancast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, and hooray for Hollywood. It's Oscar week. The Oscars are this Sunday, and myself and my co-host Sean O'Connell will be giving you our ultimate Oscar predictions. Sean, our Oscar predictions should be it. Like, if somebody's filling out their ballot, we should be the last people they listen to on this subject.
I don't know why they bother with the Academy and their whole process.
Don't even watch the show. We're going to tell you.
Yeah. Well, and no, here's the funny thing, though, because someone actually said to me, didn't the Oscars already happen? And it really does feel that way because there's been like 15 bazillion award shows leading up to this. And so you get all the same actors, you know, time and time and time again. This year in particular, you're seeing a lot of the same faces. By the time you get to the Oscars, it is pretty anticlimactic. We all can pretty much fill out a ballot telling you who's going to win if you've been paying attention the whole time.
Yes, but there are only one Oscar. There's only one Oscar ceremony. We still haven't really given a lot of, you know, a lot of award ceremonies. But how many of them have really gotten into the nuts and bolts of sound mixing and sound editing? Not many.
Or, you know, foreign language and animation and all those categories that you get up and run to the bathroom.
How many have had Idina Menzel?
Excuse me.
Pharrell, Bette Midler, Pink.
You too. Yeah.
Not many. These are a lot of performances this year. You know what? We're going to get into that. The second half of our show is going to be Oscar predictions and what we're most looking forward to. So let's hold our thoughts for that. The first half of our show is going to be about superheroes, Godzilla, because believe it or not, yeah, the Oscars are this Sunday, but we're right on the heels of summer and some really big movies that are hitting theaters really soon. I've already seen the 300 movie. I can't really talk about it yet, though. So we'll talk about that maybe
next
week.
Well, that's just bragging.
I love it. I love to brag. I have seen that, and I liked it. I'll say that much. But there are a lot of big movies heading our way. And we're starting to see some really crazy previews for them, including Godzilla. That's the big trailer. You know, last week we talked about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer. This week it was the Godzilla trailer. I was really impressed with it. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was smart for them to use Bryan Cranston, a lot of Bryan Cranston. I don't know how much Bryan Cranston is in the movie, but, you know, the Breaking Bad phenomenon, they were smart to use Cranston as the focus of this trailer. What do you think about it?
I'm fascinated by, I don't know who he's playing. Like, in the beginning, he sounded like some crackpot who was trying to, like, poke holes through the government conspiracy of this wasn't natural disaster and there's really something going wrong. I'm amazed at how much they were able to still not show Godzilla. Like, until the very end, when you get a shot of him sort of coming at you, and they're really just selling the amount of carnage that they're going to get in this film. And it's really, I mean, I was really curious about Godzilla and how they could do it in a post-Pacific Rim world.
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah, and Del Toro gives you in that movie, he gives you full-on, like, kaiju monsters. Gareth Edwards, the director of Godzilla, is still really playing with a, you know, humans going against a massive monster without the Jaeger technology in our favor and how devastating it could potentially be. So it was more scary to me than, you know, geeky pump your fists, you know, go beat the daylights out of monsters from the sea. It still looks like, gosh, this is terrifying and it's going to strike that kind of chord. And the trailer set that mood perfectly, I thought.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be one of these movies where there's an ensemble characters where they're all off kind of doing their own – they're all off reacting to what's happening in their own sort of settings. And I guess the movie's going to bounce around and maybe connect these people in some way, shape, or form. You know, we don't really know yet. Like, who is Bryan Cranston? Is he the quote-unquote Matthew Broderick of the movie? Is he, like, the crackpot scientist who's, like, you know, figuring it all out for everyone? You know, he's the only one who's got the answers. Is that him? But – regardless, I mean, I think if anything, these two trailers prove that, you know what, this is going to be better than the last Godzilla movie.
Right.
I think we have that at least.
Well, technology's improved.
Technology has improved. And another thing that I really like about it is from the first two trailers, the first trailer, we barely see anything of Godzilla. We see like a little tiny peace. And then the second trailer, we see a lot more of Godzilla. Still not the whole thing, but we see more of Godzilla. And then we see a little tiny piece of other monsters, you know? Right. And so each trailer gives you a little bit more and then teases something else that's really cool. I hope that they continue that trend. And then, like, in another couple of weeks, we don't get, like, I don't want to see just all the money shots right before the movie, you know?
Right.
Savor something. I want to be surprised. So hopefully they don't, you know, we're not seeing character portraits of all these other monsters and stuff right before the movie, because I would like to be surprised in seeing what we see.
It's one of those franchises, too, that doesn't need a lot beyond the title Godzilla to sell you. You know what you're getting, and that's what you're going to show up for.
Is this – let me ask you a question. You know, we don't usually see movies like Godzilla in the May 16th time slot. I feel like we usually have a really big movie at the beginning of May and then – a really big movie at the end of May. And then the movies in between, like last year we had The Great Gatsby. I remember when we had that Robin Hood movie. You know, I feel like the movies in the middle of May are sort of wild cards. Godzilla, on the other hand, I mean, at least based on these first two trailers, people are really stoked for this movie. This could provide some serious competition for the film coming the week after it, The X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Well, but that's part of the thing, though, is that so many other films have claimed massive slots, you know, in the summer schedule. You've got a Transformers movie coming out. Like you said, the X-Men movie's coming out. There's not a lot of real estate to sort of stretch out. You have to now – obviously, Spider-Man's kicking it off this summer. You have to get in and get your audience and then strike fast, strike hard. No mercy, sir. You know, it's just
– no mercy.
But I do – you're totally right. Normally, that second weekend in May – is slower to allow whatever comes first, like if it's the Avengers or something like that, give it some room to breathe. But Godzilla's going to pounce right on top of Spider-Man, and if people keep responding to the trailers this way, then that movie's going to open huge.
It is going to open huge, and it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny, but I think Marvel Studios was the smartest ones of the whole bunch by putting Captain America the first weekend of April. I mean, they could pretty much own the entire month of April and make – most of their money before Spider-Man even comes out.
Well, and isn't that funny, too, that, like, what the summer movie season keeps getting pushed a little bit earlier and a little bit earlier. I mean, we got Fast Five. That was an April release. You know, this year, like you said, Captain America, it's April 4th.
Yeah, I think
that
April's,
feels like a summer movie. That feels like it should be a summer movie. It's just that summer was so crowded, and Marvel just feels like, hey, we can come out in April, and you're going to come anyway.
Yeah, I think April is going to turn into the new May, so to speak. Especially if Captain America opens up April with Iron Man 3 type numbers,
right?
Then that first weekend of April all of a sudden becomes the new first weekend of May.
That's scary because you're going to get a 6 month summer season eventually.
I mean, look, it's exciting. It's a lot of work for guys like us, but it's exciting for people who like to go to those kinds of movies.
Well, because when you think about it on the tail end of it, September it tends to be a dog season. But if they start programming some other massive franchises, because we're getting some franchises that are claiming they want to have, you know, one movie a year. You put one of them in September, you know, and one of them in April, and all of a sudden the season is much longer, and it's bookended by huge potential money-generating blockbusters.
Hey, they're moving movies out of the summer now and putting them in February. RoboCop was moved out of this August and put in February. 50 Shades of Grey was moved out of August and put in February. The Lego movie just opened up in February to crazy numbers. So, I mean, not even just April. Let's back it up. You got Divergent coming out at the end of March. You have 300. You have Noah movie. March is stacked. The end of February is stacked.
Well, we saw, like, the G.I. Joe sequel went after March, too. And yeah. It wasn't The Hunger Games. I thought there was another young adult movie that came out.
Well, The Hunger Games started in March. That's kind of the launching pad for these big YA friends. Now, Divergent is sort of Hunger Games' younger sister or younger brother. They're opening up in that original Hunger Games spot.
Right.
Hoping. And I imagine since The Hunger Games is taking that November spot that they took over for Twilight, that was in the November spot. Now, it'll be interesting to see how Divergent does. If Divergent does crazy business, does it stay in that March spot, or do they move the sequel into the sequel may already have a release date. I'm not sure. It's called Insurgent. Maybe they move it into like a July spot. I don't know. Harry Potter
it's
spot.
It's hard to keep track.
Let's move on. Star Wars news. We actually have some significant Star Wars news. I guess maybe because it's still not confirmed. You know, I mean, we've gotten past the point of just random rumors on X site. Now we have a trade paper, Variety,
right,
telling us that Adam Driver, who's a guy whose name has been bandied about for a while. He was actually rumored for Batman vs. Superman, too. This is a guy from Girls. He was an inside Llewyn Davis, tall, lanky, deep-voiced guy. Now they're saying he's nearing a deal to star as the villain in Star Wars Episode 7, a guy who is sort of along the lines of Darth Vader, they said, in the vein of Darth Vader. I don't know if that means that his character is going to be like Darth Vader, a guy in a suit, or, you know, a guy that was good that turned bad, or if he's going to be in the vein of Darth Vader in terms of him being the main central villain for all three of these sequels. We don't know that yet. Adam Driver's an interesting choice. I personally like it because the guy freaks me out even when he's playing like a nice guy. He does. He's just this tall, lanky, deep-voiced guy, and he could really do some powerful things with his face. It would be a sin if they just stick a mask on him. But what do you think of that? What do you think about
this? My initial reaction is that it doesn't have the wow factor that you would have got if you told me that it was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Really? You're going to get first of all, Benedict Cumberbatch is still rumored to be in this. And for all you know, Benedict Cumberbatch is Adam Driver's father, and they're both villains in the first movie. And Benedict Cumberbatch dies in the first movie, and Adam Driver rises up. For all we know, that's what's happening. We don't know.
Well, and because they're rewriting it with each passing minute. I mean, all of this is possible. You didn't let me finish, by the way.
Sorry.
You cut me off, and I was going to say Gary Oldman also.
Yes.
If you had confirmed Gary Oldman, I just think I would have been kazowed. But you tell me Adam Driver. And it's so funny. It's the way that all of this is worded. It's like Adam Driver might possibly be getting close to thinking about signing. Nobody will confirm anything.
No.
And so I guess we're all waiting to hear – we want to hear confirmation of – the three original people coming back, although it's so heavily rumored that it's almost fact at this point.
Yeah.
And the latest tip that really intrigued me was this notion that they're still pursuing the story of these twins, which if you read these Star Wars stories, the extended universe stories, it's, you know, the twins of Han Solo and Princess Leia. And that gives you a trilogy worth of material. And I don't see where Adam Driver fits into that. So I'm still kind of confused.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's got to be a villain, I imagine,
yeah.
You know, and I think it would be a little bit – I think if they introduced twins that sort of split off into different directions, one became bad, one became good, that's something that could happen.
Right.
You know, we don't know. I think you know, and it's interesting you say you would have been kazowed by Gary Oldman. I mean, Gary Oldman is like – he's like in every major franchise right now. I feel like – are we getting a little – you know, on one hand –
The answer is no.
I know. On one hand, he's the best part of some of these movies. He's the best part of the RoboCop remake. He was one of the best parts of Nolan's Batman movies. I imagine he's going to be one of the best parts of this the upcoming Apes movie. You know, but at the same time, we're so used to seeing Gary Oldman like play the same dude in all these franchise movies. He's like the voice of reason, the guy that's like, you know. What would be nice is if they got Gary Oldman to play a villain. So I do agree with you. I would have been kazowed if Gary Oldman wasn't the guy helping out the heroes, but he was the villain. That would be interesting to see.
Think of all the franchises that he could chalk up to his name if he gets into Star Wars. He was in Batman, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
He's going to be in Planet of the Apes. He's just in RoboCop. I mean, he's in Harry Potter. That's a resume. That is a resume to stack up upon all resumes. Maybe he's thinking for his retirement, all he wants to do is go to conventions and just keep coming out on stage and making speeches and earning a fortune just signing autographs for an hour or two at each convention.
Yeah, maybe that's what his retirement plan is. But you know what? He's doing a good job. I think he's one of the best parts of all of these movies. And so that's why they keep casting him. It's like he's like the token box office king. I have no idea what I'm saying, but you know he is a good he's a guy that's going to give you a good performance no matter what you do. He's a guy that a lot of fanboys, I guess you could say, feel comfortable seeing because he was so successful with Christopher Nolan's Batman movies and Harry Potter. You know, he's somebody that you put in one of these big fan-friendly movies, and he's just kind of like a, you know, he's like a teddy bear. He's like a comfortable thing for people.
So do you think this is a slippery slope now? Like, now that they've let an actual trade, you know, comment on Adam Driver, that we're going to hear more names? And
yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Disney and Lucasfilm, they're very – They have a plan. I'm sure they have a plan. And production is coming. So once this thing starts shooting, you have to tell people who's in the cast. I imagine that they're going to do a whole – either it'll be a video, it'll be a big press release. They're gonna do something. And I imagine when they do make it official, I could see everybody coming at once. I could see them saying, this is our cast.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it piecemeal, I see them saying,
like they did with the Avengers, then they just roll all out at once.
Yeah, it's like, this is our cast. This is who it's going to be. This is when production begins. This is where we're shooting. I could see that all coming in one press release. You know, but then Kathleen Kennedy likes to do the videos too. So we could see some kind of video with the cast. I don't know. But, you know, they also have May 4th. May the 4th be with you coming up, too. So maybe they're going to do something over there. I don't know. But production is imminent, so you got to tell us something. It's a lot, you know. And I wanted to ask you fast. We're going to get into Oscars, but Spider-Man, too. Here we go. Another superheroes this week. Sony said they want to make a Spider-Man movie every year. You know, we're going off Sinister Six and Venom movie and – Is Spider-Man, like, you know, Marvel Studios can do it because they have a wealth of characters. They have tons of characters that they can kind of keep giving movies to, keep giving TV shows to. But can Spider-Man and his existing, you know, the characters within that surround Spider-Man, can you spin off that into a movie every year? Spider-Man nut.
Well, you can't do it with the people who they have. I mean, obviously, Andrew Garfield's not going to do it forever. He's in his 30s as it is now. So by the time they get through this third one and they just confirm that Mark Webb is going to come back and complete his trilogy, which I think was always his plan. That was always his hope. He started it with an idea of doing three movies. Obviously, he had to wait to see if it succeeded before you've got the chance to do it. But he'll conclude, and then they'll have different places to go. They talk about maybe doing a Venom film. They talk about doing a Sinister Six film. But, I mean, Spider-Man has to be part of those movies. Like, if you're going to do a Venom film, you want to see him fight Spider-Man. You don't just want to see an Eddie Brock Venom movie.
But I feel like that's what they're going to do, you know? And so that's the one hard part about this plan, is that I think they have the intentions of doing movies that don't involve Spider-Man. And when they're movies that are branching out from one character and you don't involve that one character – that could hurt the grand plan. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I like Spider-Man. I like his characters, the characters in his universe. I would watch them on the big screen. But can they create their own universe where you're literally putting out a movie every year, you know, and some of them without him?
Well, they can, yes, but they'll have to recast every time. I think they're going to have to get Spider-Man into it, but they're going to have to recast it, and people are going to have to get used to that. And I think it's kind of like we've had X amount of Batmans up to this point, and, you know, no one's really complaining about the fact that they're rebooting Batman. They know that Batman has to be in the Batman Superman movie, and that Christian Bale can't do it forever. So I think we're going to get to a point where they're going to say, look, we're doing a Sinister Six movie next. And by this point, we're going to be into what, 2017? We're going to have a different Spider-Man. And you're going to get a younger kid. And because Andrew Garfield said this to me, here's my humble brag. He said this to me during an interview for the Amazing Spider-Man press tour. Because I talked about the fact that I was so happy he kept the mask on and he wasn't always ripping it off to fight. And it wasn't like Tobey Maguire versus Topher Grace in the final battle. And he said, because nobody's bigger than the mask. Like, you show up to these movies because you want to see the mask and you want to see the costume and the person in action in the Spider-Man suit. So I think Sony can get away with recasting. And if you give me a Spider-Man versus Venom movie, I don't really care if Andrew Garfield's in it. You know, I care that Spider-Man is in it. So I think that's their plan. Can they go in that direction and keep rolling out new characters? Sure. I mean, Spider-Man has an infinite number of characters and villains you can keep bringing out. It's going to call into the question of the mythology of it. You know, when are they going to change and what direction they're going to go? But it's very similar. I see it to Snyder getting Batman, but he doesn't have to stick to Nolan's mythology. Yeah. Someone else is going to get Spider-Man, and they're not going to have to stick to Mark Webb's mythology.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. Of course, The Amazing Spider-Man Part 2 comes out May 2nd. We'll have a lot more to talk about when that film comes around. But let's move on. We have about 10 minutes left. The Oscars, big ultimate Oscar predictions. Sean, tell us, you know, let's go right off the bat, the big one. Tell us who's going to win Best Picture.
12 Years a Slave, although I hope that it's Gravity, and I think it comes down between those two. And I'm really fluctuating. Like, it might be Gravity. It could be a Gravity thing.
I'm in the same boat as you. Gravity all of a sudden has come on strong. I think maybe because there were a couple of stories where somebody talked to an Oscar voter and they said, I like Gravity the most, or whatever. And then you hear somebody else and they're like, how do you not vote for 12 Years a Slave? You know, so it's really kind of a two-horse race right now. My gut tells me 12 Years a Slave is going to win, and Alfonso Cuarón will get the Best Director Oscar.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I think the people who argue for Gravity say that there's so few times you can point out when that was it. And, you know, there was a split just recently with Argo, and Ang Lee won Best Director because Affleck wasn't nominated. So to have another one pop up, you know, so quickly after that is hard. But I think that Cuarón, he has to get recognized in that director's category.
Yeah.
And he was recognized by the DGA, wasn't he? Didn't he win for the Directors Guild?
Yeah.
Which tends to be the body that votes on that category. And so you think that he's got it again. Now, the question is just, can Gravity get enough momentum to get the Best Picture win? And I really do hope that it happens, because to me it's the most groundbreaking and complete film in the race. Although I love 12 Years a Slave also. I love for what it accomplished. I love for what it tried to do. And McQueen's obviously a brilliant filmmaker. So I'm okay with that. I'm all right with those two horse race, you know, one of those emerging. Now, if it splits and something like American Hustle or Wolf of Wall Street rises up, do you see any possibility of that happening?
I see no possibility of that.
Gravity or 12 Years.
Yeah. You know, I feel like if 12 Years a Slave wins, everybody says, okay, I see that. Definitely. That's a Best Picture winner. If Gravity wins, I see a lot of people going, that's cool. That's cool that movie won. And that's kind of, but I'll be honest with you, the Academy Awards needs that. You know,
it typically doesn't win,
but this year, just in the show they're putting on, I can see them really trying hard to appeal to everyone, not just adults that like to watch, you know, Hollywood's Big Night. They're bringing in Pink to perform. I'm sure she's going to do something crazy. You know, they have Idina Menzel, they have U2, they have Pharrell, they're all performing. You know, I see them, the theme of the night is heroes. We're going to see nods to superheroes, to literary heroes, to real life heroes, to animated heroes. I feel like this is the year where a Gravity could win and signal a change, in the direction of the Academy Awards moving forward. It could be cool to see Gravity win. Gravity would be the cool win. 12 Years a Slave is the expected win. Either film deserves it. All nine of these movies are great movies. But
they are. But if Philomena wins, you'll be disappointed. Come on. You can say it.
I would be disappointed. I feel like Philomena is a good film. I really liked it. I really enjoyed it.
Sure.
But I saw both of these films with you at the Toronto Film Festival. But you know, when I saw Gravity, it really took my breath away. So we'll see.
My only fear is that Academy members didn't go see it on the big screen. Like, they tried to watch it at home. Because you and I have talked about the fact on this podcast, even, that it's a different movie when you watch it on a small screen.
It is a different movie. Let's move on. Let's do a lightning round, because some of these are pretty easy predictables. Best actress, Kate Blanchett. Are you disagreeing?
No, not at all.
Okay, so Kate Blanchett's winning Best Actress. Put her in the check mark. Checkmark, yes, of your Oscar ballot. Best actor, I've gone a little bit back and forth and saying, can Chiwetel steal this from Matthew McConaughey? I still feel like it's McConaughey's year, especially, you know what was a big boost to McConaughey, I bet, was that True Detective on HBO. That kind of kept him in conversations as being like this, you know, the McConaissance. So to speak.
He has also given, and don't think this doesn't count, this counts a lot, he has given great speeches leading up to the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
And I think people are just excited to see what he's going to get up and say, too. So
Matthew McConaughey, put that in your checkbox for best actor, best supporting actor. You know, this is another one where I've gone back and forth, but I really don't see how Jared Leto doesn't win it. He's my pick. You have another pick?
No, he's my pick definitely too. Of course, we're right in line with the past winners. To me, Fassbender probably could and should maybe win that category, but Jared Leto was great.
Yeah, I saw 12 Years a Slave before I saw Dallas Buyers Club. Both, we saw these at Toronto too, just to show you how important Toronto is. So many of these movies premiered there. I saw 12 Years a Slave. I was like, oh, who's going to be Fassbender? There's nobody who's going to be Fassbender in this category. Then I saw Dallas Buyers Club. I was like, Jared Leto. Oh, my God. You know, really, either one of those guys could win this award. I think Jared Leto has the momentum, though. I think he's going to win. Now you get to the Best Supporting Actress, and here's where things get interesting. I think if there's an upset in the major categories, it's going to come in this category, and I think it'll come from Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave beating Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle. J-Law is the front runner for this category. What do you think?
I would disagree because I don't really see her as the front runner yet, although I know a lot of people are saying that. I think because she won recently, it depends again with the momentum of 12 Years a Slave. I viewed Lupita Nyong'o as a front runner right
really?
Now. If there's going to be an upset, it would be that Jennifer Lawrence upsets her.
Really?
I think she would kind of surprise me if she walked away with her second win in such a short amount of time. She just won for Silver Linings Playbook. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't really leave American Hustle thinking that, you know, she has to win for this performance.
Neither did I. That's why I've been surprised at how much she's won from this performance, because I felt like it was a lot of it was similar to her Silver Linings Playbook, you know, kind of just I guess you could call it just a wisecracking Chatty Cathy kind of girl.
Well, and maybe if she lost for Silver Linings Playbook, then the Academy would feel much more like they had to sort of make up for that loss kind of thing. But Lupita Nyong'o's performance is so incredible, and I just think that she deserves it more. And but again, it's such a popularity contest, and no one's more popular than Jennifer Lawrence right now. So there's a very good chance that really looks like a neck and neck category.
I agree. Those are your major categories. We have 2 minutes left. What's the thing you're most looking forward to watching at this year's Oscars?
The musical performances, as much as they're going to drag the ceremony out, if you get a chance to see, you know, U2 performing and you get to Idina Menzel singing Let It Go, that is a chance to be a show-stopping moment in a ceremony that desperately needs some show-stopping moments, because it tends to drag it sometimes. And if you inject that kind of musical performance into it, I think it could really perk people up.
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with you. I'm most looking forward at seeing how the Academy changes their show this year. I think, you know, after last year, they had Seth MacFarlane. He was a little racy for them. They got Ellen back this year. But I feel like there's just in the past couple of years, especially when the Golden Globes rising in so much popularity with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and everybody looking at that show is just more fun to watch than the Oscars.
Right.
I feel like the Oscars have been really trying to bring in more of those younger viewers. And this is the year, more so than the last couple of years, where I feel like they're really, really taking a big stab at it. Pink is the one right there. Just having Pink perform randomly is the one that's saying to me, okay, they're going after some of these younger viewers. So I'm curious to see what they do with their show. And how they kind of spread the wealth. Can they appeal to the young? Can they appeal to guys like me and you in our 30s? Can they appeal to people, the older generation? Can they appeal to everyone at the same time? That's what they need to do. Can they do it? I hope so.
Well, and deliver a manageable show. I think anytime you push the 3-hour limit, part of the thing I love about the Globes is that get in, get out, it's funny, and then it's over, and then moving on.
Yeah, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
There's a lot of things being added to the Oscar telecast, and hopefully it'll make it better, but it's also going to make it longer.
Yeah, well, you know what hurts it is that the Golden Globes, like every award is like a major award, because they just do big awards for movies, big awards for TV. So that's what keeps your attention. You know, the Oscars, you know, they'll start off big with maybe some supporting actors, and then they kind of get into sound editing and sound mixing. And these are all categories that they're important to have. These are critical responsibilities in making a movie, but they're categories that – that kind of lose people. People lose attention with them. But so I'm curious to see how they dress up some of their lesser known categories this year and keep that pace going. It'll be interesting to see. Use Ellen. Use Ellen as much as you possibly can. I don't want to see her disappear after the big opening number.
Which always happens. Yes. And the host tends to leave.
Yes. So. But Sean, thank you very much. It was great talking to you. And I'll see you on the other side of the Oscars.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Enjoy your weekend at the movies.